Hi, this is Beth Joan Shaw with Spirit of Success, and welcome to First Things First, a weekly devotional for businesswomen who desire God's guidance to seek as we seek to honor Him with our businesses. We meet by teleconference each week on Monday mornings to hear a word from the Lord and to encourage each other in prayer. The old adage is true. God won't put you where He can't keep you. That truth opens chapter 3. In our book study, The Church in Babylon, by Dr. Erwin Lutzer. You know, most all of us have enough life experiences to know it is true that our God is able to keep us from falling no matter what circumstance we are in. He doesn't put us where He can't keep us. Of course, we have to make decisions to cooperate with the Lord wherever He has put us. And as we learned in our reading this week, that includes in matters of conscience. Our author pointed out three specific areas where we may face conflicts of conscience. First, due to laws that we may disagree with, such as programs that our tax money pays for that we might disagree with. Or secondly, we may face conflicts of conscience in our workplace, where perhaps we may be silenced in sharing our faith. Third, we may face conflicts of conscience in personal issues where friends or family members disagree about cultural norms, such as living together before marriage or same-sex marriage. How do we as Christians respond to conflicts of conscience? How do we live in this world but not become corrupted by it? Well, conflicts of conscience are not new. It was everyday life for God's people who had been taken into Babylonian captivity. As you read this week in the book of Daniel, Daniel chapter 1, that Daniel and his three friends faced conflicts of conscience that tested their resolve in all three areas I mentioned, with the laws of the culture, with their workplace, and with their personal issues of faith. We read about this in Daniel chapter 1, the first 8 verses, which read, "In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia and put in the treasure house of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service. Among these were some from Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave them new names. To Daniel, the name Belteshazzar. To Hananiah, Shadrach. To Mishael, Meshach. And to Azariah, Abednego. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this way." Well, Daniel and his friends were chosen from the best and brightest of the young men of Israel. It was as if King Nebuchadnezzar maybe had gone to West Point or any of our military academies and then chose the finest young men there from among each to take into his service. He wanted the strongest and brightest. And then Nebuchadnezzar assigned these young men to 3 years of indoctrination into the Babylonian education and religion and culture. These young men received a 3-year constant filling of occultism, idolatry, and paganism in an attempt to brainwash them. Nebuchadnezzar even had their names changed to reflect Babylonian names that honored Babylonian gods. Not to mention, they'd been taken from their families and all they had known. As Dr. Lutzer describes in his book, On page 82, he writes, "These men had every reason to hate Nebuchadnezzar for his cruelty, for stealing their freedoms, for trashing their own faith commitment. But God said, in effect, don't be angry, for I have appointed you to be a witness where you are." Think of it. Get over your hatred and serve your enemy. We have no idea how many dreams died in these men when they found themselves in Babylon. Dreams of a family, dreams of having a home in their beloved city of Jerusalem. But God would replace their dreams with his dreams, that they be faithful to him no matter the cost. But there was a limit to their concessions to pagan culture. Daniel 1:8 says, "But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself." What a critical statement. The King James translation, our author mentions, Daniel purposed in his heart. Daniel purposed in his heart. You see, he made this decision about who he would obey long before he had been taken to Babylon. Daniel's convictions and that of his friends were instilled from birth by their parents and their Jewish culture. Daniel knew God. He worshiped God. He respectfully feared God. He loved God all of his young life. And he long before had purposed in his heart that there was a line that he would not cross. And being forced to eat food that had been used for idol worship, well, that was a line that Daniel would not cross. And Daniel was bright enough to not just be belligerent about it. Remember, he is the captive here. But instead, he suggested an alternative, that he and his friends would eat fresh fruit and veggies for 10 days and then see if they aren't healthier than the others eating the other types of rich foods. And of course, as we know, they were proved healthier. Dr. Lutzer writes in his book on page 84, "Daniel's convictions were rock solid. He had made compromises that he could live with, but some matters were non-negotiable." In essence, he was saying, "I can help the king, I can advise the king, but I will not compromise my faith in Jehovah. It is all a matter of resolve." Our author goes on to write, "I certainly don't want to give the impression that I think we can imitate Daniel and his friends in being indoctrinated with the occult education. My point is, we should never underestimate God's commitment to keep us where he plants us. There is much in pagan society that you can consciously be associated with, but there is much that we must stay away from. That line might not be drawn in the same place for everyone. May God give us the wisdom to know where it should be drawn for us." Wisely stated by our author. So where do we draw the line? In our own convictions. Well, in his writing, Dr. Lutzer suggested a couple principles for us to consider. First, remember that God is still on his throne. God is still on his throne. Look, no matter how much it may look these days like God has been defeated, nothing could be further from the truth. We read this from our author on page 90. "Let it never be said that there are so many disturbing trends in our society that we must simply blend in with the culture as best we can. Nor should we withdraw from our culture, abandoning it to its well-deserved fate. Let us not divorce God from our predicament, but rather see God in it. The promises of God for his people are still in place." 1 Peter 2:9 still reads, "But you are a chosen race, a holy priesthood, a holy nation, a people for his own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light." 1 Peter 2:9. He goes on to write, "Even in the chambers of an evil king, these four Hebrew men saw themselves as agents of God. And to us, Jesus says, you are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, from Matthew 5:14. So let us joyfully heed that call. Remember, God is still on his throne. Second principle, be clear about associate with and participate in. This is super important. Hear this. Daniel and his friends served as advisors to the pagan king. They did their jobs, yet when they gave advice, it contained years of wisdom from God, but they were not preachy about it to the king. And they did not participate in any of the evils the king chose to do. So we can do our jobs where God has placed us, even when it means working alongside coworkers or for bosses whose choices we wouldn't adopt. We can go to lunch with them. We can have them as workplace friends, absolutely. But we don't have to participate in their negative behavior or decisions. That is where we draw the line. As Dr. Lutzer wrote, friendship, yes, participation, no. Be clear about, associate with, and participate in. And third principle, respect latitude of conscience. Look, what are believers to do? What are we to do when we face a cultural issue? A cultural issue where believers in all good faith might disagree. Our author reminds us that God gave us instructions in Romans chapter 14, you might look it up, that teaches us to give each other respect and grace in matters of conscience that are cultural issues. Our author writes this on page 93, let us respect the mother who says, I cannot attend my daughter's same-sex wedding. I will explain my convictions to her and assure her of my continued love. Let us also respect the parent who says, I will attend, not because I agree with this sinful union, but because she is my child, and I want to show my love for her even though she knows I disagree with her actions. He goes on to write, we have to explain to this generation that love and truth are not in conflict, that a conscience informed by truth can be very loving, even though it draws a line and says, I refuse to do this. He continues, what we cannot do is let the world tell us where we should draw the line. The world should not tell us what we can do and can't. Our cultural elites tell us that if we were loving, we would do what they think we should. But we derive our definition of love from God's word, not from the vicissitudes of the cultural currents. So let's respect latitude of conscience, but we can never let the world tell us, because we don't follow the world, we follow God. Let's be faithful, then, to seek God's wisdom with these issues of conscience. You know, there is much in today's culture that we can still associate with, and there is much we must stay clear of. For most of us who've been believers for many years, we know how to handle the issues that are clear. It's the ones that are, well, in the gray areas, the matters of conscience, where we can have, well, some questions. James assures us that if any of us lacks wisdom, we are to ask God, who will give us the wisdom to know where to draw the line. Trust that God won't put us where he can't keep us, and then let's purpose in our hearts to follow him. Well, thank you for listening, and I pray you received a word from God today that will encourage you and equip you to do your work as unto the Lord. And if you'd like to participate in our weekly live First Things First Telebible Study Time, just email me, Beth@spiritofsuccess.com. Thank you, and God bless.